This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. The way we find, get, and pay for health insurance has changed dramatically in the last several years. That's made a huge difference for millions of people, making a complex system easier.
My name's Kendall. The area that I'm in is a little lower income, and a lot of my friends and family don't have insurance. I think it's because it's a scary process, and it just seems too complicated. I recently signed up with Obamacare. I actually called in, and I now have this wonderful lady that helped me with my insurance, and I can always call her. I have her in my phone as the healthcare wizard, and I've been sharing her with my friends and family, and it's been really awesome hearing how excited they are that they have this coverage now that's affordable, and it's something that they never thought they could have before.
Kendall, thank you for sharing your story. And there are lots of people like Kendall across this country. So this week is very, very important to them, or should be, because the open enrollment deadline under the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, is this Saturday, December 15th. Don't feel bad if you haven't heard about it. The federal government is spending less on marketing it this year, and the media coverage is down. Signups are down, too. They're on track to be the lowest since the healthcare exchanges began. What needs to be done to ensure that everyone who needs coverage gets it? And what political threats and challenges might the ACA face in the future? We'd love to hear from you if this affects you directly, so email us, 1a@wamu.org. What's it like signing up for healthcare these days? Or perhaps if you are one of these healthcare wizards who's helping your friends and neighbors navigate the system, what are you doing and what are some of the big challenges they're running into? 1a@wamu.org. Comment on our Facebook page or tweet us at 1a. Joining us in studio is Cynthia Cox, the director of the Program for the Study of Health Reform and Private Insurance at the Kaiser Family Foundation. The foundation, by the way, is not associated with the health plan Kaiser Permanente. Cynthia, welcome to 1A.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Also with us in studio is Dan Diamond, a reporter at Politico. He writes the Politico Pulse newsletter, which covers healthcare politics and policy, and he is the host of the podcast Pulse Check. Dan, welcome.
Good to see you again, Joshua.
Let me start with you, Dan. We said enrollment in health insurance plans through healthcare.gov is down this year. How significant of a drop is this?
It's been about 10% off from the numbers last year, Joshua. There are 4.1 million signups so far through healthcare.gov, according to numbers released this week. That's off about 600,000 from the signups last year. And what is most concerning to folks who watch this closely is that the new customers have dropped off by about 20%. So that suggests that the awareness of this enrollment period is not at the level that it has been in previous years.
I imagine, Dan, that there was some point at which, even in the early days of the Affordable Care Act, we would have expected enrollments to kind of plateau, level off, maybe even drop as people got more coverage. Is this in line with expectations or is this something different?
It's a very good question. There is an argument that perhaps the economy is so good that more people are getting covered through their jobs. Maybe they don't need to go to the Affordable Care Act for coverage. Or, as the Trump administration has advanced this week, maybe there are so many people who are happy with their current plans. Premiums have flattened out. They used to go up at dramatic rates year over year. This year, they're up only about 1 or 2%. So maybe lots of people are happy enough that they're waiting for auto re-enrollment to kick in, which will come at the last minute of the exchanges on Saturday. But I think why this has been so surprising is we have seen other measures of uninsurance go up. The Georgetown Center that tracks children's uninsurance has seen the children uninsured rate go up for the first time in about a decade. There have been other measures. Cynthia's colleagues at Kaiser Family Foundation have seen the number of uninsured go up as well. So we're not seeing the broader evidence that we've reached a level where this should be plateauing. If anything, this is the first time in a decade that the uninsured rate appears to be going the wrong direction.
Cynthia Cox, give us a sense of how enrollment in these marketplaces relates to the health care of Americans at large. I mean, what would it mean for the wellness of the nation if, come this Saturday, the enrollment numbers remain low?
Well, it's important to keep in mind, although Obamacare has taken up about 95% of the, the exchange itself has taken up about 95% of the media coverage around Obamacare, it's really only about 5 to 7% of the U.S. population that's actually signed up in this market. And so for the vast majority of us, for people who get employer coverage, what happens in this market really does not affect us. But for the people who are getting coverage through the marketplace or buying their own coverage off of the exchange. The drop in signups is concerning because it could mean that premiums in that market will continue to have to rise more and more in future years.
What is your sense, Cynthia, of this drop-off in signups? Is this something surprising this year, or was this the kind of thing that was expected?
I think insurance companies and analysts expected there to be a drop-off in the number of people who were buying coverage off of the exchange. So those are the people who do not get a subsidy. And insurance companies kind of baked that expectation into the price of their plans for 2019. I think it is a little bit more surprising to see such a significant drop-off in the marketplace itself, because most of those people are getting such a significant subsidy. It's such a good deal for them that just the repeal of the individual mandate penalty alone probably doesn't explain everything we're seeing here.
And just to be clear, Cynthia, that penalty, this is the thing that you would see on your taxes, where if you did not have insurance and couldn't check all 12 months of the year, that would be a penalty on your taxes.
Exactly.
By the way, Dan, before we go too much further, we should address one thing that was in Kendall's clip just for clarification. She says she recently signed up with Obamacare. Just to be clear, because I know there are scammers out there who will play this game, Obamacare is not a health plan, right?
Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, is the mechanism to get covered through either the exchanges. There's also, as Cynthia was getting to, there are other ways of getting covered, the Medicaid expansion. And the Affordable Care Act is a very big piece that is unrelated to what I think we're going to be talking about today. But there have been scammers who have either offered Obamacare health plans or, quote, Trump care health plans. But when you call those people up often, they are not the federal government. They are people looking to make a quick buck.
Yeah, I've seen a number of people with storefronts that say, come here and sign up for Obamacare. And I'm like, someone should burn your house down. We are speaking to Dan Diamond, though. They should not burn the I'm being hyperbolic. But you're right. Thank you for clearing that up.
That's what we get on NPR, the hyperbolic.
Exactly. That is what we're known for. Clearly, we're speaking to Dan Diamond, health reporter for Politico and the host of the podcast Pulse Check, and Cynthia Cox, the director of the Kaiser Family Foundation's Program for the Study of Health Reform and Private Insurance. We welcome your questions and stories as well. 1A@WAMU.org. App State Jen tweeted, I love the ACA. I was tossed into the high risk pool after losing my employer coverage. The ACA is literally the best coverage I've ever had. It's affordable. It's easy. The first year was hard to enroll because of the site issue. Last year was hard due to the enrollment period. Dan, could you respond to that one? What about just the process of getting enrolled? What have we seen, particularly in the last year or so, in terms of just being able to log on, find a plan, make a payment, and so on?
Well, I think the listener is right that that first year, the exchange, in fact, all of the Affordable Care Act, was overshadowed by those site issues. Though, at the end of the day, those site issues actually brought a lot of attention to the healthcare.gov website, to the enrollment period, and in some respects may have led to a lot of people signing up because they just knew about the exchange. Those site issues over the past couple of years have been ironed out. The Trump administration has done some things in recent months that have raised concerns, though. They have stripped some information on how to sign up, and that has led Democrats to say this is more evidence of sabotage, of the Trump administration not doing its job to oversee this government program. There have been steps that the administration has taken recently, though. I just spoke with a gentleman at Stride Health, which works with companies like Uber and Etsy and Postmates to get those independent workers who aren't getting covered through their jobs to get them signed up more easily. And the folks there have said, look, the Trump administration did act in good faith and has made it a lot easier for these gig economy workers to quickly sign up for coverage. So it's a little bit of a mixed basket where you look. But in terms of making it easier to sign up, there have been positive steps in the past couple of years.
Cynthia, I'd love to get your reaction to a statement that we got from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. It's the government agency that administers healthcare.gov. We invited them to take part today. They said they were unable to attend but provided a statement, which they credited to a spokesperson. Here is the statement, and Cynthia, I'd love to get your reaction to this. This is from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which administers healthcare.gov. And the statement reads, quote, as in past years, enrollment weeks are measured Sunday through Saturday. Since this year's open enrollment began on a Thursday, the cumulative totals reported in this snapshot reflect one fewer day than last year. We cannot provide a direct comparison to last year's enrollment numbers. The focus for this year, as it was for last year, is to provide a seamless open enrollment experience for healthcare.gov consumers. Statement goes on to read, quote, there are likely many factors that affect enrollment levels. As is standard practice, we also closely monitor our outreach campaigns, customer service resources, and other work on behalf of consumers, making adjustments as needed throughout the open enrollment period, unquote. That statement from a spokesperson for the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Cynthia, your reaction to that?
Sure. Well, it is true that there's one fewer day in the measurements here, but that's easy to adjust for. So maybe rather than there being a drop of 11 or 12%, it might be more like 10 or 11% drop. But there still is a significant drop from last year. Additionally, on the note of outreach and consumer assistance, I think it's really important to note that going into last year, marketing and advertising was cut about 90%. And going into this year, the Navigator program, which provides both outreach and in-person assistance, was cut by 72% just going into 2019 after it had already been cut the previous year. So there, all in all, the vast majority of funds that were available to advertise or market the ACA or to help people sign up in person has been cut dramatically.
Dan?
I was in Oklahoma a few months ago, which is the state with the second highest uninsured rate, I believe, behind Texas. So lots and lots of uninsured people. There are only three people this year in Oklahoma City dedicated to being those assisters, those wonderful ladies, to the earlier caller's point, who sit down and help folks get covered. There used to be many more.
Three in the entire state of Oklahoma?
All of Oklahoma City. Across the state, there's more like six or eight.
We'll talk more about how people are signing up for health care as we continue our conversation with Dan Diamond and Cynthia Cox. If you do still need health insurance, healthcare.gov is the site that can point you in the right direction, or you can call 800-318-2596. Again, 800-318-2596. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. This Saturday is the deadline to sign up for healthcare through the Affordable Care Act, or ACA, marketplace. It's healthcare.gov online. Signups this year are down. We're discussing what that means for the health of the country with Cynthia Cox, who studies healthcare reform at the Kaiser Family Foundation, and Dan Diamond, who covers health policy for Politico. We'd love to hear from you, too. If you signed up for healthcare through the ACA this year, how was the signup? Was it easier? Was it harder? Were the prices what you expected? Did your rates go up? Or maybe you're no longer in that exchange. You've gotten work and now you're covered through an employer. How is that working out? Or if you're still struggling to deal with the system, if you have questions about the way this sign up works or what you need to prepare for or what you need to know, or if it just didn't go right when you tried to sign up, now's a good time to get your questions answered. So comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A or email 1A at WAMU.org. Before we bring in our next guest, let me get to a few more of your comments. Ken tweeted, "I'm a recent college graduate, and my current job does not provide benefits. I enrolled through healthcare.gov this year. The process was easy and streamlined. I learned a lot, and now have affordable health insurance." And John tweeted, "Every year our marketplace prices go up and up because insurance companies are pushing back against the ACA, and the people who suffer are lower middle-class income like myself." Cynthia, could you react to John's tweet in terms of the role that insurance companies have played in the Affordable Care Act, this idea that they're pushing back against the marketplace?
Right. Well, no one likes to feel bad for insurance companies, but starting out when the ACA first opened the exchange markets, insurance companies were losing a lot of money. And that's problematic because that means that they might not continue to participate. At one point, it looked like there would be parts of the country where there was no insurer offering coverage on the exchange market. So we need, for this market to work, we need insurance companies to be wanting to participate and to be making either a profit or at least not losing money. So premiums have increased pretty rapidly, especially in the last couple of years. Some of that was insurance companies just needing to get back on track. So they had to raise their premiums in order to cover the costs of the sicker than expected population who was signing up for coverage. Some of the premium increase is really beyond the control of the insurance companies. It was really driven by policy changes or kind of politics to some degree. And so, yes, some of this is insurance companies raising their rates. Some of it was outside factors that the insurance companies really didn't have much control over.
Dan?
And I would say, having talked to a number of House Democrats who either won re-election or are newly coming to Congress in the next couple of weeks, they point to this insurer behavior. And they say, we shouldn't feel bad for insurers, like Cynthia was referencing. This is why we need something like Medicare for All, a system where we're not working through a convoluted hybrid like the Affordable Care Act.
One of our listeners referenced that very thing. Apple in Tallahassee, Florida, texted us, I'm currently without health insurance. My new job offers health insurance enrollment only after 1 year of employment. And the cheapest plan I could receive through the ACA was over $400 per month. I'm 28, female, and mostly healthy. I work at a major retailer and make $12 an hour. As a result, I just paid out of pocket for a doctor's visit and blood work. Total around $450. Next week's follow-up and results not included. The system is still broken. Medicare for all. Let's add one more voice to our conversation. Joining us now in studio is Aaron Hemlin, the Director of Training and Consumer Education at Young Invincibles, a group that encourages young people to sign up for health insurance. Aaron, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
First of all, I love the name Young Invincibles. It sounds like a DC comic. I dig it. Why young people? Remind us why young people are so essential to the marketplace.
Well, for a number of reasons. One, young people pre-ACA were uninsured at higher rates than any other age group, about 30% of young adults, and we generally think of young people as between the ages of 18 and 34, lacked health insurance. So this is a really important group when the ACA was first being formed to make sure that we are providing coverage to those young adults. Those young people got coverage in a couple different ways. One of the big ways was through the expansion of dependent coverage, so being able to stay on your parents' plan until the age of 26. So when we're looking at marketplace coverage now, most young people, again, are probably on their parents' plan. So we're really looking at 27 to 34-year-olds, which is a pretty small age group. So about 28%, I believe, of current marketplace enrollees are between that 18 and 34-year-old gap. But generally, the perception of why we need young people in the marketplace is because they're young and healthy, like the last listener said. So that helps kind of keep premiums down, compensates for older and sicker people to make sure that we have a balanced risk pool.
It's also interesting, Aaron, how young people very quickly became part of the politics of the Affordable Care Act because they could stay on their parents' plans. It felt like that shifted the whole policy debate immediately and created part of Obamacare that even critics of the plan said they loved.
That's right. That's right. I think, yeah, that provision is probably the most popular part of the law, like when it was first enacted and to this day.
Now, we heard Kendall at the very beginning of the conversation, who said she signed up for insurance for the first time this year with someone she called her healthcare wizard. They're technically referred to as healthcare navigators. That's kind of built into the system. Is Young Invincibles working as kind of a healthcare navigator, or is that something different?
In a sort, we actually are what's called a CDO organization. So we can certify volunteer assisters. That's separate from navigators, but we do some direct enrollment through our own staff and then work with other folks, some of which are previous navigators who lost their funding, who can now continue to do enrollment work through volunteer assisters. We also run a large coalition of navigators across mostly states that use the healthcare.gov platform. So we work very closely with navigators across the country on a daily basis.
Let me sidebar for just a moment and come back to Dan Diamond. Define navigators in terms of the ACA. This was something that was built in to help people sign up.
Health insurance is complicated. Signing up for health insurance is complicated. Navigators were funded as people who could sit down and say, Joshua, you need help signing up for coverage. I will spend an hour with you getting you through the website.
Cynthia?
One thing to add is that there are health insurance brokers, too, who can help people sign up, but they're often paid a commission based on which plans they enroll people in. And so the Navigator program was meant to be a way that people can get assistance without there being any kind of financial incentive to steer them one way or the other. And one thing to note also is that navigators are much more likely to help people who are currently uninsured, who speak a language other than English, and who would be eligible for Medicaid than an insurance broker would be willing to do.
Cynthia, this was also one of those aspects of the ACA that made it different from state to state, because in some states, like, say, California, which created its own marketplace called Covered California, they invested a lot of money into a brand new website and lots of navigators and in-person centers and the phone line. They poured money into this. But other states, including some that just kind of relied on healthcare.gov, the ability to even sign up at all, depending on where you lived, could be relatively easy or extraordinarily hard.
Yeah, that's right. And so part of this is the funding for these sort of outreach activities is done through what's called an exchange user fee. And so insurance companies pay a fee for being able to operate on the exchange or the marketplace. And then that can go into these marketing or outreach or enrollment assistance programs. And that's especially true in states that run their own exchanges. In states that use healthcare.gov, there's more limited control over what they have to what resources they have to devote towards outreach.
Erin, are there certain kinds of challenges that the young people you work with through Young Invincibles tend to deal with when signing up for health insurance? If one of them is going to get stuck in the process, mm-hmm. where do they tend to get stuck?
It can be a couple of things. One, a lot of young people are brand new to health insurance. So they might be coming off of their parents' plan or coming off of CHIP or Medicaid and are completely new to signing up for insurance on their own, new to the private health insurance market, and just have a lot of questions. They don't tend to know all the terminology of what a deductible is or what, you know, co-insurance is. So a navigator can really help explain all of that. So one, going through the actual application process, but then just understanding health insurance in general. And then on top of that, I think another big issue can be one, perception of cost. So a fear that it's going to be too expensive, and then trying to figure out what their projected income for the new year is. Like the listener earlier who's working in retail, if your hours vary, it can be really difficult to project what your annual income could be. So making sure that you are projecting that income correctly so that you're getting the right amount of subsidy to make sure that your plan is affordable on a monthly basis can be complicated. And it's helpful to sit down with someone and walk through that process.
We heard from two of you with similar stories about signing up for healthcare through the exchange this year, Emily and Amber. We've got a mashup of what they left in our inbox.
Hi, this is Emily from Atlanta, Georgia.
This is Amber from Pittsburgh.
My husband and I both work multiple jobs for small businesses, and we do not get healthcare benefits, so we have been using Obamacare for the past couple years.
After 12 years as an adult without having access to health insurance, since we're both artists, having the ACA come into our lives really has been so helpful. We really needed health insurance because of accidents, et cetera.
The first year we signed up, I think we were paying about $500 for minimal coverage. And this year we just looked, and to get the exact same plan, it's over $800.
My partner and I updated our application for ACA Marketplace Insurance, and we found out that our premiums will be going up by 50%.
We're not sure if we're even going to be able to sign up for it this year with our budget.
Yeah, Emily, Amber, we appreciate you sharing your stories. Thanks very much for calling in. Cynthia, what is your sense of their experience and whether it reflects people whose health insurance is going up this year? Is that common?
Well, I think what the callers illustrated is that the experience with the ACA really varies from person to person. So if you're eligible for financial assistance, you could be paying, you know, $50 a month, getting a really good plan that's as good as most people's employer coverages, that has a, you know, reasonable deductible. If you make just too much money, so this might be a family of four who makes just above $100,000 a year, which is a good income, but is not necessarily enough to afford health insurance without a subsidy. And so those folks might be paying 15-20% of their income on health insurance. And especially if they're healthy or reasonably healthy, they might just find that it makes more sense for them to drop their coverage.
Dan?
Across the country, there have been enough people affected by this program that a reporter like me could basically find any anecdote to write any kind of story, whether it's someone saved by the Affordable Care Act or someone who's been harmed by it, too. And I think that's something for listeners to keep in mind when reading coverage of the ACA and its impact. On balance, there has been a lot of benefit from this law, but are there people who have suffered from it too? Absolutely.
Laura in Durham, North Carolina emailed, I will be uninsured again this year since the bronze plans, which offer the lowest level of insurance, are still absurdly expensive. I am young and healthy, and I am the person the ACA should want to enroll since I rarely go to the doctor, so I help support the sicker population through paying my premium without using it. Sadly, no longer. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Erin, could you respond to that last one? What about young people who are looking at health insurance and they're like, it's expensive. I got college loans to pay. I'm trying to save money for a house. Like, I have to not plan to get sick right now.
Yeah. I mean, like we've just been saying, affordability can be a real issue depending on your income. But on the flip side of that, you know, getting sick, getting in an accident can ruin you financially for years to come. So generally speaking, if you are insured, you kind of you have that financial security, that peace of mind, knowing that if you were to get really sick, spend some time in the hospital, you're going to be guarded from huge medical debt that you might be vulnerable to if you decide to go without insurance.
Dan?
The Trump administration, and President Trump specifically, ran on a campaign of trying to introduce more options than the ACA. And they have done that. The Trump administration has rolled out a resurrection of the short-term health plans that the Affordable Care Act tried to get rid of. So young people who might be priced out of the ACA can instead buy these cheaper alternatives. But cheaper kind of doubles in both price and coverage. They don't cover, these plans don't cover as much as they used to. And it gets to the issue that Aaron just raised. People might be buying coverage, but it turns out to be coverage in name only. And then they're stuck with the debt and added cost that the ACA is trying to prevent.
Aaron?
Yeah, I think that when it comes to short-term plans that tend to often be targeted specifically to young people, we see some ads that are like, this plan is perfect for college students, for example. It really doubles down on the problem of young people having low levels of health insurance literacy. So these plans might look like affordable coverage, and we're not only in trouble if you get into a bad accident and it's not there for you, it might not cover common things that young people at this point expect to be covered, like birth control.
You know, when we can, I do want us to talk a little bit more about just some of the basics of healthcare when we continue. It occurs to me that there may be some folks listening right now who are like, this is all nice, but I whenever somebody mentions coinsurance or my deductible, I just nod and smile and try not to look as stupid as I feel when they talk about these terms. So a little bit later on, let's just walk through how all of this works, like how you sign up. Let's go through what these terms mean just to make sure we're not leaving anybody behind. But Cynthia, you wanted to jump in.
Oh, I was just going to add on the short-term plans. We've looked at a number of these short-term plans, and most of them do not cover prescription drugs. None of them cover maternity care. It's really limited coverage. And just for an example, one of the plans we found had a brochure where on the cover of it, it shows a young couple rock climbing, and they're up at the top of the mountain looking very victorious. And if you read the fine print in that same brochure, it says accidents from rock climbing are not covered.
Oh my God. What?
Yeah.
That is, no, that's, you made that up. That can't be true.
I mean, we also see brochures where it's a, you know, a young, happy couple holding their baby, but none of them cover maternity care. So the advertising can be very misleading for people who don't have a lot of health insurance literacy.
Dan, this is exactly the kind of thing that the ACA was supposed to prevent. Like, there was this basis of coverage for things like falling from a rock face if you're scaling El Capitan, or particularly maternity coverage, birth coverage. That was supposed to be baked into the ACA, and this is one of these things that A, weakened it, and B, makes it more complicated.
This is one of the things that made the ACA plans more expensive, because if you want to cover all of those things, then you're going to have to charge more for them. And the reason some of these short-term plans can get away with such cheap prices is because the level of coverage is so skimpy.
I wonder how people who advocated the ACA from the beginning to that point view these changes. I mean, that was one of the critiques, is that, yeah, we're going to be insuring everyone, but it's going to be pretty expensive. And critics of the ACA, including those who advocated a replacement plan, said there should be more options in terms of people who know they're not going to need, for example, maternity coverage.
The authors of the ACA and its defenders are upset, to put it mildly. Some of them are apoplectic about what has happened here, because the advances that the ACA made in the insurance market, the protections for patients with pre-existing conditions, the getting rid of these junk plans, that was seen as a major advance. And to bring them back now has really worried folks like Andy Slavitt, who used to run CMS under the Obama administration, and says this is just getting rid of the gains that we have made and worked so hard to get over the past number of years.
Before we have to pause, Aaron, what do you say to young people who say, I can't afford it? What kind of strategies would you suggest for them?
Well, one, it's probably cheaper than you think. Again, because young people who are uninsured, who don't have a job-based option, tend to have lower incomes, they're likely going to qualify for some kind of financial help to lower their costs. So before you say, oh, it's probably too expensive, I'm not going to be able to afford it, I would say make sure to go to healthcare.gov and just apply, see what you might be eligible for, because it's likely you're going to get some help.
We should talk politics when we continue our conversation with Dan Diamond of Politico, Cynthia Cox from the Kaiser Family Foundation, and Aaron Hemlin of Young Invincibles. Tom in Cincinnati asked, what will happen to the policies bought through the ACA if the government ends the ACA? That was the first thing that President Trump said he would do when he became president. That has not happened, but where does the political fight for healthcare stand now? Stay close. We'll continue in a moment after a quick heads up about something fun we're planning for next week, about a holiday tradition, Christmas music. Every now and then, a mega hit holiday song comes along. The last big one, and I'm sorry to call its name out loud because you will never get it out of your head, was "All I Want for Christmas Is You" by Mariah Carey. We want to know what holiday song you could not live without. Was there a song that made a big impact in your life? Leave us a voicemail, 855-236-1A1A. Maybe you have a holiday story to share about a Christmas song, or perhaps there's one you just wish would go away. Tell us your story, 855-236-1A1A. Or you can use our app, 1A Vox Pop, to send us a radio quality audio file and to keep up to date on future topics. We will share some of your stories next week on 1A. Back now to our conversation with Dan Diamond, Cynthia Cox, and Aaron Hemlin. Let me get to a few of your comments before we keep going. Mary emailed, "The ACA raised our rates to the point that we could not afford health insurance at all. Not exactly affordable, now is it? So we joined a medical sharing organization. Those are becoming more popular, so you should consider those in your numbers." Cynthia Cox, are you familiar with these medical sharing organizations? What is that? Or Dan, or have you heard of these before?
I have, and that's something that my colleagues at Politico have covered closely. These are plans that are more ad hoc. They're not run by health insurance companies. These are everyone in a community maybe paying in to a plan together. And there are challenges with that kind of plan long term because of the financial sustainability of these more ad hoc plans versus something that's run by an insurance firm.
Stephen emailed, "I am an independent contractor and have to buy my healthcare off healthcare.gov. The first year I bought healthcare, I got a great plan with a premium of $68. The next year, it went up to $120 a year, and then $200 the next. This week, I went shopping for healthcare on the exchanges, and if I want healthcare that covers anything, then I will have to shell out up to $700 a month if I want a deductible that isn't at least $15,000. I wished my pay increased as fast as healthcare prices have." Cynthia, how does this happen from $68 a month to $700? It's like a 10 times jump. How is that possible?
Well, part of this might be, and I don't know the caller's exact circumstances,
right,
but some of it might be that if your income is right on that border of being eligible for a subsidy versus not being eligible for a subsidy, it certainly can just from one year to the next. Let's say last year you made $99,000 and next year you make $105,000. And, you know, that can be the difference between getting a $10,000 subsidy per year or getting nothing and having to pay really large premiums. So the underlying cost of healthcare is really important to consider here. And this is driven not only by what insurance companies are having to charge, but also just the cost of medical care going up each year. But usually that's going to be much less than what this caller is experiencing. So I would say this is probably a case where someone went from having a subsidy to not having a subsidy.
And maybe the fact that he's an independent contractor also makes it worse, because presumably if your income goes up like that, maybe the system's designed for you to get it through a job that pays more and the job would have benefits.
Yeah, there's a huge cliff right at four times the poverty level. And this has been something that even in original drafts of the ACA, the discussion was, should the subsidies continue up more? And it still is a discussion. And I think that there really are people who just don't have an affordable option if their income is just too high.
Dan?
I talked to the folks at eHealth Insurance this week, which is one of those brokers helping people get covered, not just through ACA plans, but short-term health plans, those skimpier plans we were talking about. And they've done their own surveys, which found that 85%, 86% of people coming and picking plans for short-term care are doing it out of cost concerns. So cost is driving these ACA alternatives.
Lots of great questions and stories from many of you. Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us, including as it relates to what your insurance will actually buy for you, particularly if you live further from urban areas. Miss Penny the Pup tweeted, "Everyone talks about how insurance affects people on the front end while paying premiums. I have yet to hear a conversation about the way insurance reimbursement affects hospitals, particularly in rural areas, and how it affects access to care. I've seen many small hospitals have to close their doors because reimbursement rates are pennies on the dollar and don't keep the lights on. So folks have insurance, but no access to health care." Cynthia, I would love to get your reaction to this, whether this is directly related to the ACA or whether this is a kind of a larger issue with health care overall that Obamacare just kind of butts up against.
I think that so people who are on Obamacare, in many cases, they're getting a large subsidy that's going to help them with the costs. There's costs that that are very hard for people to handle, which is mostly for people who are not getting a subsidy. And then that can really create a challenge for them in paying for the rest of their household expenses.
Dan? I would say, having talked to hospital associations and doctors, they are happy with the Affordable Care Act coverage as opposed to the alternative in many cases, which is being uninsured. Or Medicaid and Medicare, which do pay significantly less than private insured insurance companies do. The states where some of these hospitals are closing, it's not because of private insurance. It's because those states have not expanded Medicaid through the ACA, and there's still a significantly high population of patients who just can't pay at all.
Yeah, with regards to Medicaid expansion, one of our listeners, Linda, tweeted, "This will be my fourth year on the exchange in Virginia. So glad that there is more than one insurer to choose from in 2019. The marketplace isn't perfect, but I need affordable health care, and this is my only option as I'm in grad school." Erin Hemlin, we heard from a number of people who are enrolling, including some enrolling in Virginia. Here is what David left in our inbox.
Hi, my name is David Lessig. I live in Fairfax Station, Virginia. The state has opened up more Medicare and Medicaid and has allowed small businesses such as mine, with one employee, to buy into insurance and that offers more choices here in the state of Virginia. So I was wondering if other states have done the same, which could reflect a reduction in the amount of people entering and keeping their insurance through the ACA.
David, thanks for calling in. Erin, what would you say to David?
Well, looking at Virginia, Virginia recently expanded Medicaid earlier this summer, actually. So enrollment for Medicaid started at the same time as ACA Obamacare enrollment on November 1st. And we've actually seen a huge increase. It's actually the pace of Medicaid enrollment is going up faster than expected, which is great news for Virginia, for the state in general, and of course for people who have been kind of locked out of coverage. As we talked about earlier, this year there are more insurers participating on the marketplace compared to last year. So that might be what David is referring to, that there are just more options this year. So more choices all around.
That was a very hot political fight in Virginia. And Dan, I wonder if we could talk politics just for a moment. We will get to explaining more of the system in a second, but I wonder what your thought is on the political outlook for the ACA, still known as Obamacare. President Obama himself has said that he's fine with it being called Obamacare. And every year, he's encouraged people to sign up for healthcare on the marketplace. He tweeted out a video on Monday to that effect. Here's a little clip from that video.
Well, it is that time of year again. The time my team tries to get me to reference some viral trend or otherwise make a fool out of myself in the name of encouraging more young people to sign up for health insurance. But not this year. I think you've proven that you don't need to see me taking jump shots or sitting between a couple of forest plants in order to know it's important to have health insurance.
Part of the video on Twitter of President Obama encouraging people to enroll before the deadline this Saturday. What's the political future for this look like? We haven't heard President Trump say much about it, but we know it drove a lot of people's actions in the midterms this year.
Well, I think President Trump's comments on the Affordable Care Act historically actually drove a lot of Democratic enthusiasm to defend the Affordable Care Act, to defend Obamacare. I mean, there are Democrats and prominent celebrities who latched on to Obamacare last year because that was a proxy for defending the Obama administration. Some of that energy went away this year because of the midterm elections. That kind of sucked up all of the energy and organizing atmosphere at the same time as open enrollment was kicking off. To your question, Joshua, about what's happening with the ACA, I think in the short term, it's probably okay. The House is going to be controlled by Democrats, which gets rid of the possibility of Congress repealing the ACA. So it's made it through that challenge. But there's still a court fight out there with a possible repeal of the whole ACA through the courts looming that the Trump administration is supporting. And there's not a lot of optimism that there will be a solution between Democrats in the House, Republicans in the Senate on a compromise to make things better in the short term.
I wonder, Cynthia, if that addresses the question from Tom in Cincinnati, who asked what will happen to the policies bought through the ACA if the government ends the ACA. Seems like ending the ACA seems a little remote. The policies, I wonder if that kind of depends on the marketplace. Like if consumers say, we know the law doesn't require you to do this, but if you don't do it, I'm shopping around.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think at least last year when there was, a lot of action around repealing and replacing the ACA, all of those policies would have gone into effect the following year or a couple of years down the road. So if you have ACA coverage now, you really don't need to worry about it ending mid-year. That should continue, even if there were some sort of effort to repeal the ACA again. But that being said, there have been changes to the law. The repeal of the individual mandate penalty could cause some destabilization in the market. It could mean that, especially with enrollment numbers dropping, that premiums have to continue going up year after year. So there are being kind of like some regulatory tweaks also that can also do this. And so I think it's not a guarantee that everyone's premium's going to stay stable for the next few years. It's the market still could struggle.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Sophie tweeted, "As a green card Brit, I just can't understand why Americans think having to navigate healthcare coverage, having a plethora of confusing terminology, and having to guess your future income and future health care needs is reasonable." All right, Sophie, I get it. We just like it different here in the U.S., I think. But I do take Sophie's point. And Aaron, before we run out of time, let's just walk through how this works. Just for anyone who hears this, they're like, I'm still confused. So, I need healthcare insurance. What do? I go to healthcare.gov?
Yes, go to healthcare.gov or call the Marketplace call number if you're more comfortable doing it over the phone.
And here's that number. It's 800-318-2596.
That's right. You're going to need your income information for 2019. So again, it's projected income for 2019, but you can use like a pay stub or something like that to help guide you through the process. You'll go through an application for everyone within your household who's applying, whether that's just you or your whole family. You'll get a eligibility determination, which will show you what kind of subsidy you might get. And like we've been talking about this whole hour, the vast majority of people will qualify for some sort of financial help.
Can anybody sign up on healthcare.gov, or is it only for like low-income people or marginalized populations? Can anyone sign up?
Pretty much any income level can sign up, depending on your state. If your state did not expand Medicaid, you might be in what's called the Medicaid gap, which means you're not eligible for subsidies, and it's a little bit more complicated. But generally, it's for people who don't have the option through their job. So if you don't have coverage through your job or your spouse's job or your parents, you can go to the Marketplace to get covered.
What kinds of plans can I buy?
So again, we're talking about private coverage. So you'll see a variety of plans that, depending on your geographic area of what's available to you. But plans from like Blue Cross Blue Shield, Kaiser Permanente, other healthcare providers like that. They're on what's called a metal tier. So there's bronze, silver, gold, and platinum level plans, all quality coverage. So they all have to cover the same types of benefits. The differences are in cost sharing. So bronze plans tend to be cheaper on a monthly basis. Your premiums are going to be lower, but then your out-of-pocket costs, your deductibles, your copays are going to be a bit higher.
Okay, three terms to define. Premium. What is a premium?
So that's your monthly payment. So that's what you pay to have your health plan.
Kind of your monthly subscription for healthcare.
Right.
What about a copay? What is a copay?
So copay is a fixed amount. You generally pay a copay for certain services like a doctor's visit or a prescription drug.
You show up at the doctor's office, they say, okay, that'll be $20 today. My copay is $20.
Exactly.
And what about a deductible? What is a deductible?
So a deductible is the amount that you have to pay out of pocket before your insurance starts kicking in and helping to pay the rest of your out of pocket costs. It can be anywhere from a few $100 to a few $1,000, depending on that cost sharing.
So if I need a certain kind of service and say my deductible is $500, mm-hmm. I will have had to pay $500 out of pocket for that coverage. And once I get to the 501st dollar, whatever my insurance is will begin to pick up the slack.
Exactly. Exactly. So again, you'll be paying what's called the negotiated rate. So you're not paying as if you were uninsured, but you basically will pay that deductible, and then depending on your coinsurance, so if you have a bronze plan, it's generally going to be like a 60-40 split, so you would pay about 40% of your costs, and the insurance company would pay 60% of your costs.
So depending on the tier, the bronze, silver, gold, platinum tier, my copays, my premiums, my deductibles will vary, and I got to figure out what works for my budget and for my healthcare needs.
Exactly, exactly. So depending on how much healthcare services you need, what you expect to use, if you need a certain medication, you're going to want to make sure that that's covered. If you don't expect to use a lot of healthcare services, you can probably use a lower plan where you're paying less monthly with a higher out-of-pocket cost.
Cynthia?
I just wanted to add on the note of bronze plans. These plans typically come with deductibles that are $6,000 to $7,000. And that's really eye-popping, especially for someone who is on a limited budget. They might not have that kind of money in their bank account where they would be able to pay that. So I think a lot of people think about bronze coverage in a way that's like, oh, I might as well be uninsured if I have to pay $7,000 in healthcare before my insurance kicks in. But I just want to point out that, first of all, bronze plans do cover preventative services for free. Many of them will cover your doctor's visit before you have to meet your deductible. So that deductible might really only kick in when you start having to get very expensive procedures or hospital stay or that sort of thing. And even if you're deciding between going without insurance versus getting a bronze plan, it's worth keeping in mind that, first of all, there are 4 million people who are right now uninsured who could get a bronze plan for free for $0 premium.
How does that work?
So that's because of the financial assistance that's available to them on the marketplace. So they would have to go to healthcare.gov, put in all their financial information, and then it will tell them how much a bronze plan will cost for them. But there are 4 million people who could get a free bronze plan. Now, you do have that $7,000 deductible, but let's say worst comes to worst, if you have...
And 7,000 is just for example.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I mean, so you have, let's say you have a hospital stay. Yeah, you might have to raise that $7,000 to pay your deductible. But one, the hospital might be more likely to see you if you're insured.
Yeah.
And two, it's a lot easier to try to raise the $7,000 on GoFundMe than it is to try to raise $200,000. It can really be the difference between keeping your house or not.
Cynthia Cox, the director of the Program for the Study of Health Reform and Private Insurance at the Kaiser Family Foundation. Cynthia, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Erin Hemlin, the director of Training and Consumer Education at Young Invincibles. Thanks, Erin.
Thank you.
And Dan Diamond, reporter at Politico who covers healthcare policy, the writer of the Politico Pulse newsletter, and host of the podcast Pulse Check. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Today's program was produced by Avery Kleinman. To learn more about her and the rest of our staff, visit the1a.org/staff. And that number, one more time, 800-318-2596. I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow for the Friday News Roundup. This is 1A.